Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm just thrilled to present such wisdom today from my guest. My guest is Anthony Lawler, whose work has been featured on both The Oprah Winfrey Show and National Public Radio. He's the author of The Temple in the House and A Home for the Soul. Mr. Lawler is an award-winning architect who lectures and offers his workshops internationally. And today we're going to talk about his latest book, which is called The 24 Patterns of Wisdom, Navigating the Challenges and Awakenings of the Human Journey. And I am just thrilled to introduce you, Anthony. Welcome to Unlimited Realities. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Lisa. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, I have too, because I tell you, I think I sent this in an email. I actually took the summer off to spend some time with my kids, and I only scheduled your show as my live show. And when I picked up your book a couple of weeks ago and started reading it, I thought, this is why. This is why you are my only live show this summer, because I have been wondering and deciphering patterns. My husband and I have had this discussion for probably 20 years where we've really have noticed certain patterns that would show up in our lives. And the interpretation or trying to define what that pattern meant has been a discovery of self and each other for those 2 decades. So I'm thrilled to bring your genius. This book was a definite mind twister for me because it was just, I think I found my mouth hanging open more times than not in just the awakening and the awareness and the insight. It's genius. It's wonderful. So my first question to you is, having wondered certain patterns in my own life and what this means, was this an inspiration for you in writing this book, or what was it that brought about the impetus for the discovery of this and writing it for you?
Well, for years I've written about how architecture is an outer expression of the patterns of thinking that we have. For instance, every day we have a pattern of desiring something, searching for it, and finding it, whether it's food in the refrigerator or some wisdom or finding a parking space. And architecture reflects that in every building, whether it's a 7-Eleven or a cathedral or an ancient temple, in the gate, path, and place of arrival. So I focused on how patterns are reflected in form, or inner patterns of thinking are reflected in form. So after years of experience and inner exploration, outer exploration, I said, let's turn that around. Let's try to understand the patterns of consciousness. How does consciousness unfold from within itself in these archetypal patterns that we all experience, and try to get diagrams so that people can see that visually, so it can be taken out of just the verbal talking realm, out of the ether, and so people have some symbols that are directly experiential that reflect those patterns. So what I did was I said, okay, starting with silent consciousness, how does our life experience unfold within itself? And that became the sequence of the 24 patterns.
Wow. It's such an incredible the way that you have written it. You start off with the opening, and it evolves into all of our consciousness and our awareness. How do we, as the average soul, become open to understanding the patterns in general? You talk a lot about the archetypes, and I want to get into how that opening begins to evolve into understanding the archetypes.
Well, the first thing is to just be honest with what we're actually experiencing. So much in spiritual life, we try to overlay a preconceived idea of what we're supposed to be feeling rather than just honestly expressing what we're feeling. So one of the patterns is the circle of the senses. So we experience ourselves at the center of our world and looking at the objects and experiences around us And there's that line of connection. There's the seer, who we are. There's the objects we see in the process of perceiving. And in that process of perceiving, we start to perceive self and other, which starts to split life into this duality. And that duality creates this primal gap between ourselves and others, which we experience as this primal wound. So the first step is just be honest with what we're actually experiencing and see how these patterns not are good or bad, but they just happen in life, and they can be allies for us in seeing through the pattern to the consciousness animating the pattern.
And then that moves into our self-awareness. And you spoke about in the book how Frank Lloyd Wright also had a creative process that also was an embodiment of the pattern of wisdom. And I find that interesting because his reputation is continuing to inspire. So it goes beyond the physical form. It has almost an emotion within the form, would you say?
Absolutely. If we look around us, we connect emotion with every form that we see. We're constantly, according to, this is a later pattern in the sequence of our belief grid, determining whether something is a friend, a foe, whether it inspires us or bores us. So every experience is a physical form, and interaction has an emotional impact. And that was one of my inspirations in the beginning in writing about architecture, was the idea that every object, whether it's a glass, a table, or a whole city, all started out as a stirring in consciousness, all started out as an inspiration in someone's awareness, that then was used to transform the raw materials of nature into that table or car or street or house or city. And so we're literally living within our imaginations, not in some abstract, mystical way, but everything that you see around you at this moment was imagined by you or someone else at some time. So we're living in our consciousness. And so since it was created at one time, we can recreate it if we can just see through the rigidity of our pattern and see the fluidity of consciousness moving through it.
And what it was really an inspiration for me as well is the thought of how I feel when I walk through certain cities, certain places. Like if it, in regard to the architecture of form and the vibration and the emotion that carries with that form. I feel when I walk through certain cities, like take Boston, for instance, you can feel an energy that exists within that city that may be different from San Antonio. So would you say that a lot of times the architecture of a city holds a vibration and an energy and even an emotion that it carries with it?
Absolutely. Every city's like that. San Francisco is different than New York. It's different than Boston. It's different than Rome. And it's just like people.
Right.
All cities have streets, buildings, parks. It's like all people. We have our arms, legs, hearts, minds. But each person carries a different quality of vibration. And that's a different pattern of that vibration. So we're not just experiencing something abstractly, just some vague soup of consciousness. We're experiencing that in a particular pattern as it's expressed through a city or a person.
And you have a little story in here that I really found was a wonderful inspiration, and it was talking about the patterns of wisdom, and it came from Paul, who was a chef who would walk through Central Park. Can we talk a little bit about that story? Because I feel like that is a really clear teaching in teaching us individually how we can look for these patterns in our lives.
Well, what I love about that story is here's someone who looked beyond preconceived ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So say you're a cook or a chef. You can either pull the recipes off the shelf and out of a book and just repeat the same old pattern, even if it's a recipe you came up with yourself at one time. Or you can use your experience in life and this dialogue with the environment to discover new patterns that are connected to the particular day of the week, the season of the year. So in that story, Paul would walk through Central Park on his way to his restaurant each day. And he'd use that time to open up to what was happening in the environment, what the time of the year was, what season it was, and to gain inspiration about the sensory experience of creating the meals that he wanted to create. And so he wasn't just locked in his head and or listening to his music on his phone and tuning out the environment. He was tuning into the environment and using it as a friend, as an ally in the act of creation. And we can do that every day. You know, we can either be lost in our own same patterns of thinking, or when we wake up in the morning, we can say, okay, this is a new day, and I can start to really open up to what the environment is saying to me in this day and dialogue with it and then discover some new patterns that are emerging that are fresh and vital and relate to this time in our lives.
And with that comes you have the third pattern of wisdom as the circle of the senses. And, you know, that's something that really resonates with me because I've always taught my children to be the awareness, to be have awareness for your surroundings and to tune into all of their senses in their awareness, whether it's environment, you know, fragile situation or a positive situation. And I loved how you really addressed all of the senses, including the intuitive sense. Is this a way that we can become more conscious and aware of the patterns by paying more attention to ourself in our own sense and our senses?
Yes, absolutely. And especially, usually we're aware of ourselves, how we feel, or we're aware of what we're looking at and what we're experiencing, the person we're with or the environment that we're in. But what we can become aware of is that ray of consciousness that's connecting the two, that process of perception, that space between us and what we're perceiving. That's where the patterns arise.
Okay.
Really, is in that space between. And that's not what we're usually looking at. We're usually unconscious of that. But when we become aware, say we're taking a bite of food or we're looking out at a bird sitting on a branch or a sunset or driving in traffic, we can become aware of that space between us and what we're perceiving and how consciousness is flowing from us to perceive our environment and savor that flow of consciousness. Then what happens is things change from being a static, object-oriented experience to a fluid consciousness-based experience, where we're connected to the flow of energy and intelligence that's flowing between us and the objects that we're perceiving. Then life becomes more alive. Then we have access to that energy and intelligence all the time. And then we also become tuned in to the fluidity of that experience, that it's always changing. So if something frustrates us, we're not locked into, I have to change the object or I have to change myself. What we can become aware of is by shifting our appreciation of it, we can deepen and open our experience.
And that also, in that deepening, makes us evolve in our own awareness of ourselves as well as our environment. So it actually is a wonderful insight and tool to use even in deepening our own intuitive knowing. And then we go through in regard to the 24 patterns, because you start with opening, then we go to self-awareness, then we have circle of the senses, and then we move into self and other, and then the primal wound and the healing womb. And all of that is it takes us out of ourself to where we actually have to now interact with others and society and humanity. And that's where we may be triggered with our primal wound. And so the symbol that you have for the healing womb is actually, for me, it looks like a really cool swimming pool with a great diving board. So I look at the healing womb and I think, okay, dive in, baby, dive in, because that's where the healing's going to take place. But the two belief systems that I really got a lot out of in regard to reading your book with the 24 patterns, we have the seventh belief grid and the eighth is blurring. Let's get into a little bit about how our belief grid can be a little rigid and how blurring can actually expand us.
Well, we all have a belief grid, whether we're conscious of it or not. We have our outline of what we think the world is. And we see this in politics now all the time. Usually what we're seeing between two sides is the battle of the belief grid, you know. And so they're both our interpretations of the reality that's going on. And we develop these belief grids to navigate the world. You know, they're helpful in navigating city streets to find the bank or the market or school or work. So they're helpful in many ways, but in other ways they restrict us, because we get lost in the idea that our belief grid is actually the reality of life. And what life does to help us out is it throws a curveball. It undermines our belief grid in some way. Just when we think we know everything, that we have it made, that we really got it, then life comes along and says, no, you don't have it.
Yeah, surprise! Guess what?
Surprise. And we usually experience this as an irritation. We resist that. But what life is doing is saying, wait a minute, there are other possibilities here. There's this dynamic between the form and the formless, between what we think we know and the unknown, and that the renewal and freshness and growth in life comes not by reinforcing our belief grid over and over and over again, but by that blurring that happens, those unexpected things that happen as we're making other plans, and opens us up beyond what we think we know. So there's this constant dynamic between the mind wanting to have this rigid belief grid for the sake of survival and security and stability and all this, and life wanting to infuse that rigidity with liveliness, with renewal and openness and aliveness and wonder. And so it blurs our belief grid over and over again.
And so in that blurring, does that enable us to become more open to different concepts and beliefs and maybe be possibly more accepting of concepts or beliefs we hadn't considered before?
Yes, it opens our compassion and acceptance to humanity. Over and over again, through my life, my belief grid has been undermined, and each time it's opened me deeper, more deeply, into what my humanity is, my shared experience with other people. So now when I see some disaster happening, I'm not distinct from it. I understand the human emotion and feeling and shared experience that we all have of this archetypal experience of our world being, we think it's one way, and some event happening that undermines that, whether it's with a friend or in world events. And every time when people are talking about this on the news, when you hear them talking about this, they always go to the humanity. They always go to that humbled state mm-hmm. where we're more open and we get beyond ourselves and we get more open to life and realize that we are not isolated from the rest of life, but we're part of this ocean of life, that life is flowing through us. And the more our belief grid becomes flexible and fluid, the more transparent it becomes to our connection with life, and it opens us to our humanity.
And that would move us into the ninth pattern, which is the fluid web, where we become more open-minded and compassionate, as you were saying. Now, where do we develop our lifeboat, which is the 10th pattern, and has a tendency to separate ourselves from that web, that fluid web?
Well, as we go through these patterns, it's this constant play between life carrying us beyond ourselves and us trying to maintain our separate identity. There's this dynamic dance that goes on. So one thing, in the world we're experiencing the fluid web becoming more alive. Before, in our lifetime, say 20 years ago, 30 years ago, things were more defined. Countries were more separate. The world was more separate. Things were more understood. We come out of thousands of years of a traditional society. So now as we move into a more energy-oriented age, in the digital age, everything becomes fluid. We can have conversations around the world. The boundaries between work and play, between one thing and another, has become much more fluid. So in that, it can be very disorienting to the mind. The mind wants to have some structure that it understands within the fluid ocean of consciousness. So we go back to then some more rigid form that we create, a kind of raft within the ocean. So you can imagine it as we had our belief grid, everything was set, we understood it, and something happened to dissolve it. We went through aging, we went through a divorce, we went through something that undermined that belief grid and starts to make it more fluid, and we start to sense the world as a more fluid, dynamic place. And so we're kind of out at sea, but we feel separate from the ocean, so we want to create a structure, a lifeboat, to float within that ocean. And so we create some structure within that. And then what happens is that's a sense of control within something that seems beyond our control. So then we want to expand that sense of control, and we kind of try to start to control the ocean of life, which mm-hmm. is the futile effort, but we try, the mind tries. We try to take the whole universe and put it into a box that we can understand.
Right, and I think that that's a good majority of all of us human beings here on Earth, where we do consciously or even unconsciously try to control circumstances when we feel that something is beyond our control. And many people fear change. They fear things rocking the boat. They fear things coming out of the blue. So that instinctual survivor mechanism kicks in, where they really want to start to gain some sort of security through controlling it. And I really found that 11th pattern very significant in seeing it in many dynamics of fear that are representative in our culture and our economy and our society today. There's a tremendous amount of trying to control things when change is upon all of us. It's everywhere.
Exactly. And the thing I think to become aware of is this is, in one way, a natural instinctual reaction. You know?
Right.
And yet, by becoming aware of the pattern, it's not suppressing it and trying to obliterate it, but it's trying to see through it. When we become aware that this pattern is arising in us and we can see through it, then it doesn't have such a grip on us, and we're freed from the pattern. And this, over time, we become more and more free from the pattern. So even if the impulse to control comes up, we can become more aware of it and let the uncontrolled energy of life flow through that pattern and free us from that. So that's the thing about all these patterns is they're natural, instinctual, archetypal patterns that aren't necessarily going to stop, but by becoming conscious of them, they don't control our lives.
And the other aspect that I absolutely love about your book, The 24 Patterns of Wisdom, is at the end of each pattern that you have, you also have a little meditative practice. And the one for the 11th pattern of control, you offer the insight of feel your attempts to control the world. And I love that, because even if we say, oh no, I'm not trying to control that, or I'm not in control, or I'm not a controlling person, you know, that's the first indicator to say, whoops, yeah, you are. So I really loved how you wrote this, how clear it was. I went through this so many different ways in reading your book, and I really loved the exercise after each controlling pattern. Would you say that when we are going through shifts, specifically like an emotional shift in our personal life, that there will be specific patterns that we may pick up on or visuals that we pick up on that embody a specific pattern, and that would be an indicator of, okay, this is what we need to focus on?
Absolutely. And there's no linear order, really, to these patterns. We can, you know, go into the primal wounds, go into control at different moments. And that's why I wrote this book, was so that we could have a symbol that we could connect to it, so that we can see the underlying pattern between the individual things. So we might be driving in traffic and think we're all cool and spiritual and expanded, but let's, you know, a lot of times we want to control what the other drivers are doing, what the traffic is doing, you know, that kind of thing, or we're in line at the market or in the market. Just thousands of ways that we wish things were different, that they were more according to our plan than life's plan. And if we recall, if we're aware of this pattern of control, it gives us a tool to just step back a little bit from the situation and not disconnect from it, but actually see more deeply into what's going on. It gives us a lens through which we can, it clarifies our vision, so we can understand it better. And that's what
right.
These patterns, these symbols are for. It's just like when we're driving, we see a stop sign, that's a symbol that means something. Or if we see the green arrow to turn left, that's a symbol that means something. So this is a set of symbols that show up. And if we are aware of it, as we walk through our town or through our house, what our attention is drawn to often is that reflector of what is our interest at the time. So if we're focused on if we're in traffic driving and we're focused on the obstacles, maybe we are presenting obstacles within ourselves more than the traffic is. Because we could interpret the same situation as a moment of peace, but as a moment of stopping and resting and just to observe what's going around. So the way we're interpreting things and what we're seeing in our environment reflects the way we're interpreting things at any given moment.
And in regard to the next three patterns of wisdom, we have number 12 as battlefield, number 13 as confusion, and number 14 as defense. All three of those are the emotions and triggers that really can derail intention in a positive growth way, because when we get caught up in the battlefield and then we become confused about decision making and then we move into our primal need to defend ourselves, let's talk about how those patterns really of the human condition really can derail any positive, how those present themselves often.
Well, we've gone from the pattern of control, so we're trying to reestablish our belief grid on a higher, on a more intense level. So one way we do that is start to divide the fluid web up into good and bad, friend and foe, those kind of things. And when we start doing that, we start creating more duality. We start to create conflict. We turn life into this battlefield. And that doesn't mean there aren't dangerous situations and things that we shouldn't be aware of. But most of the time, we're dividing the world up in ways that make us less safe when we think we're making us more safe. And so we start to see these people, and these people as good, those people as bad, this food is good, this food is bad, and we go through our whole lives. And then when we do that to try to control life on a more deep, on a deeper level, and the control doesn't happen, we're still, things still intrude upon us. And when our attempt to control life by dividing it up into good and bad zones doesn't work, we get confused. Mm-hmm. We're going, wait, I tried so hard. I'm so earnest about what is right, what is wrong, and have these clear dividing lines. Life says, again, well, things aren't really that way. That's just the way you're interpreting them. And so we get confused. And in that confusion, we can harden our defensive stance and build up a wall of defenses that separate us from the world. So we're increasing our limitations, and we're actually making our lives more dangerous by increasing this defensive layer of armor around ourselves.
Right. And that's, that survivor, that need to protect, that need to take care of ourselves. And it's a very primal human conditioning that we fall into, and not necessarily anything that's going to benefit us, because oftentimes we have number 15, the pattern of wisdom, where the flood comes in. And it's as if, okay, all your defenses are knocked down. The flood's washing them away. Here we are. Now where are we beginning from? So, you know, the flood can represent often those circumstances that we have no control over and come in out of the blue. Let's talk about how the flood can represent itself in our life after we've built up these defenses and moved through our battlefields in confusion.
Well, the flood happens in everyone's life at one time or another. Either there's divorce, financial loss, some disease, we see it in the news where there was the fires in Colorado. Something happens that just overwhelms our defenses. And this seems to be a disaster, and at the moment, that we experience, it is a disaster. It's a very overwhelming, emotionally destructive experience. But what life is doing, again, is helping us. Because before that, in our defense situation, we've bought into the idea that I am a separate self, that I am isolated from the world. And that, while it reinforces the sense of identity, cuts us off from the flow of living and makes us alone, isolated, rigid, and living in a kind of death within the world. Life comes along and just overwhelms that by usually the means that most gets to our core thing that we're attached to. It usually sweeps away our relationship, our finances, our health, or something like that that we most believe in as our separate identity. And it does, when it does this, it's breaking down our defenses and opening us to that deeper and more expansive energy of life. And it's usually a very painful experience, but in that pain is that humbling where we start to see, okay, I'm not separate from the world. I have my individual identity. I have my individual wave on the ocean of life, but it's all life is made of, or the ocean is made of water.
Mm-hmm.
And is expressed in the individual ways. And so we start to experience we're all made of consciousness. We're all made of energy. And we have our individual identity, but it's not disconnected from the rest of the world. And so that flood comes along every now and again in our lives to remind us of that.
And with the flood, eventually, we have to accept and move into a surrender, which is your 16th pattern. And you have surrender in many ways, it dissolving the emotional blocks. And it also is a very humbling experience to move into a surrender where it's not so much of giving up as much as knowing that all is in divine order and that we are not powerless. So can we talk a little bit about how surrender shows up for us in regard to, you know, catastrophe, chaos, change, shift, flood, all of those things, and then moving into, you know, how we can embrace surrender? Because I really loved your exercise after surrender as well.
Well, the situation with surrender is we can either see ourselves as victims of circumstances or receiving the gift of initiation by life.
Amen.
And so if we've ever gone through some kind of initiation or ritual, usually they tire us out. They're long, they're uncomfortable, they take us out of our comfort zone and break down our rigid defenses. And so the thing of surrender is how we approach it. We can either, again, approach it as a victim, woe is me, and that's the separate ego self saying, I'm not getting my way.
Right.
And not things are not happening the way I want them to. And instead, we can look around and say, how are things happening? How can I relate to what is going on and open to the energy and wisdom of life. So we see this in the whole environmental situation. Human beings have had ways of wanting to live in nature that violate the laws of nature. And so we get polluted cities, overcrowded cities, traffic jams, and even the whole economic mess we're in is this disconnect from the flow of nature. There's no lack of abundance in nature. There's no traffic jams in nature. There are, and so by seeing our ways of living disintegrating, we can either say, wait, let's scramble and hold on to what we have and keep making the same mistakes over and over again and keep ourselves in isolation and suffering, or we can say, hey, life is calling to me, is saying something to me that is beyond my limited thinking. It has a greater intelligence. It has the intelligence that creates for us, that creates the sunrise and the sunset, that creates the renewal of the season. And so that's what happens when we surrender. We can see into those greater experiences of life.
And so when, as we move into surrender, would you say that our compassion's peaked to a level where we can have more of a clarity in our communication and dialogue, which is your 17th pattern, where what we are able to express is more clearly put and more open rather than rigid?
Absolutely. A lot of times I feel one distinction is people can walk around interacting with life as a lecture or a dialogue.
Yes.
And in that separate self state, we're walking around interacting with life as a lecture. And so we can be in a room with other people and everybody's expressing their opinion, but it's all a lecture. What happens during the time of the flood and surrender is we get brought to our knees, something mm-hmm. beyond our control. And we get to a place where we really say, you know what? I don't know. I'm lost here. My mind can't figure this out. I don't understand. And life, and then we can turn and say, okay, what does the bigger mind of life want to say? And start to dialogue with that and start to listen to the impulses of creation and enter into a conversation with life. And all of a sudden, by doing that, we're not so alone. Life
right.
becomes our ally instead of our thing to try to shape and mold in our image. We start to open to what is the image of life wanting to express through us and to itself through us. So everything becomes an opportunity for that dialogue, going through the checkout line in the market, interacting with a friend, walking down a city street, walking in nature. When we're in that more humble position and not trying to lecture life, trying to reinforce our belief grid, we can listen and have the exchange. And we've all experienced that in times when we've been in relationships where the relationship is about a lecture, one person trying to control the other person, and it turns into a disaster. It's just a painful situation. Or those times when we really connect with someone and there's a give and take in our relationship, in our dialogue, and where it becomes a dance. It becomes like music, like musicians playing together, and many other examples of the sense of life being created through our interaction rather than through our attempted suppression of life.
Okay. And, you know, the next aspect that you encompass is the view field, and that's the 18th pattern. Now, this takes us outside of our comfort zone a little bit, doesn't it? Looking at the view field of kind of going into a place where we don't have complete control and we are influenced by a workplace or a school environment or a society in general. So there's an aspect of us commingling and looking at this through different eyes. How can we look at our view field and benefit the most from it?
Well, when we start to live life as a dialogue, we move from reinforcing our fixed viewpoint to moving into what I've called the view field. And we experience this through our lives. So when we're a child at home, we have our particular viewpoint of what the world is. Then we go to school. So our viewpoint moves into a wider field of experience where we realize we're not the center of the universe, that there are other children in the world. And then this changes when we move into the workplace and throughout life. Our life experience broadens and broadens. And again, if we always are trying to reinforce our viewpoint, if we make our point of view the be-all and end-all of everything, life stays the same. It stays limited. And when we open to our dialogue with life, we go, maybe I can see this from another viewpoint. And that broadens my own depth and connection with life. So it's just like in politics now. We see people trying both sides of the aisle just stuck in their viewpoint. This
right.
is the way, and that's the problem. It's not what the issues that are being discussed. The problem is this attachment to a particular viewpoint. If people could switch to the other side of the aisle and see and really enter the other person's viewpoint, it would open the situation to a field of experience where we're seeing, well, we're both humans, we're both trying to figure out what the heck is going on here in this mm-hmm. world, and we have different ways of approaching that we might discover new ways rather than just reinforcing the old way. So the shifting view field, again, gets us out of one way of doing things and opens us up to greater possibilities.
And so if we have acknowledged, like, the blurring, excuse me, when we have acknowledged the blurring pattern, it would enhance or expand our viewpoint, would you say?
Absolutely. And then we look for the blurring pattern.
Right.
Instead of living to solidify life, we're living, how can I make it more fluid? How can I make it more open? How can I make it more alive? And we all experience people like this. Some people we meet, they're like stone. They are fixed in their way of seeing things. And then other people are open to it and curious about life. And that's being open to the blurring.
Right.
Life with curiosity.
And it would also make surrendering easier and embracing change and all of these things by not having those rigid structures containing our beliefs. So it's, you know, you've put this so succinctly and so beautifully. It's just, it's an incredible book. It is just an incredible book. And we're moving into my favorite part of your chart, which thank you so much for sending me this chart. This chart's great. I'm going to hang it up in my game room here so my kids can look at it and I can teach them. But the next aspect, and I want to just take this, I don't want to make this about me, but I want to use my experience and ask you a question here, because there were years and years and years where the patterns of the eye would encompass me. It would follow me. I would see it. I would doodle it. It would be all over my experience in life. And now it's the shape of the heart. So everywhere I go, I could be riding my bike, taking a walk, whatever, and I'll see, you know, a piece of string on the ground, it's in the shape of the heart, or a piece of tar that's on the road and it's in the shape of the heart. Or I find, you know, the ironic part is I actually collect stone hearts from the beach when I take my walks. So these two patterns are something that is very resonant within me. And where would I relate an eye pattern? Would it be on the 19th growth and decay renewal, or would it be the labyrinth?
Well, it could be both of them.
Okay.
Why limit ourselves? But
the
in a way, when I'm looking at this, because I have that chart in front of me now, what springs to mind is the labyrinth, because the eye, not just by its shape of the drawing, but the eye is more mental and it's more trying to figure out life. So we get into this labyrinth of experience and we're trying to figure things out, but life is this mystery to be explored rather than a problem to be solved. And so it takes us on this journey. So that's the mind, and the eye is that kind of exploring, looking into things. And the heart is the coexistence of opposites. It's the harmony of opposites. It's more like the growth and decay. The heart embraces creation and dissolution, and surrounds those dualities with love, and the dualities become finer unity in the heart.
Ah, wonderful. So I feel like those are the areas of that really spoke to me in regard to renewal and growth, because I'm one of these weird birds that really embraces change and growth. It doesn't scare me. I've gone through enough of it, so I know it's always going to get better. But, you know, it can be scary there at times when you're going through it. And oftentimes I think that when we're kind of stifled or feeling kind of a little boxed in or stagnant or even repressed in a change or a growth, it's difficult to step outside of ourselves to see the symbols or to see the patterns and the archetypes that present themselves in our lives. Where can we go in these patterns rather than blocking ourselves? Would you say that it becomes a combination of the self-awareness and the circle of the senses to open up to receive the archetypes and the symbols more instead of shutting down?
Yes, it's being willing to open and look without a preconceived idea. And then, because if we have a preconceived idea that I am an I symbol person and we always search for the I, then we're excluding the possibilities of other symbols coming into our awareness. And so what I suggest is just being aware of what and noticing what's going on in terms of that dialogue, and even ask life, okay, what is it now? What's the symbol now that can help me on my journey at this stage? Oftentimes we want to get it done once and for all. But if you go into a great temple or cathedral, there isn't one place to be or one carving or one experience of light. There's light and shadow. There's the big expanse of places in the center, and there's the little side chapels on the side. So there are all these different containers of experience that can respond to what we need and what we want at a particular time and place. And so the main thing is to be open to see that everything is, that life is alive, it's speaking to us, and that it's presenting us with forms that are outer forms that are reflecting our inner design at any given moment.
Now, the next one was one of my favorite patterns, and it's the 21st pattern. It's wordless wisdom. And you discuss it in a way where it illustrates kind of in a twisting, turning way on the labyrinth, and it leads to an unexpected core of knowledge. Can we talk a little bit about how this can show up in our lives? Because oftentimes I think we don't give ourselves that reflective piece when we're getting wisdom. And it's not something that's being told us. It's something that we're experiencing. How can wordless wisdom, the 21st pattern, show itself in our life on a physical form? What does that look like?
On a physical form, wordless wisdom is the gap between things. So every doorway we pass through, there's a space that allows us to pass through. We may notice the door frame, the door, and all that, but it's the space between that allows us to pass through it. In every room that we're in, the space in the room is what makes it alive. There's a wonderful line in the Tao Te Ching that says, we hammer wood for a house, but it's the space inside that makes it livable. So most of the time we're focusing on what we can grasp, what we can pin down, what we can name, you know, and we call it by different philosophies, Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, or we talk about these different patterns. But what I've experienced is these forms are a setup for seeing what's beyond form. And that, our mind is trying to fill in this gap. But if we can just open to that gap between things, that moment of not knowing, and be patient within that gap, within that not knowing, some wisdom will arise that we can understand. And so meditation is a setup for that moment of getting beyond thought.
Okay.
Yoga, living, we have these structures over and over again that allow us to see what's beyond structure. And so in our materialistic society, we're so focused on structure. But if we can open to what is that silent, unspoken wisdom that's permeating and around everything, then we can get beyond our limits and open to the unexpected, that source of life that gives rise to form, but it's beyond form.
Wonderful. And then that brings us to 22 and 23. 22 would be the flowering, and 23 is the release. And as I look at the archetypes here, they're actually the same archetype, but you have the release as a blurring. Almost to me, it looks like a blurring of the flowering. And would you say that in the flowering aspect of wisdom, we're embracing all our wonderfulness and life and really, you know, charged with everything? And then in the releasing, you have it as actually letting go of what has been held. You have letting go of cherished experiences frees us to enter deeper possibilities of living. Is that a form of, like, blurring, the releasing?
Yes. Again, life takes our attachment to some form, even to glorious, radiant experiences, and says there's something more. And so our garden blooms in the spring and summer, and the flowers are radiant and colorful and beautiful. And then fall and winter come, and there's that disintegration of those forms. And so the point is the form, the point is not the form, the point is the flow of life using those forms as vehicles to move through it. So, and how that relates to our lives, we can either see our life as a solid form of our identity, our accomplishments, what we've achieved, or see ourselves as vessels through which life is flowing. And
wonderful, wonderful. And then you have the 24th pattern would be the ever deepening, and that is a continual circle around a circle. And we have covered all 24 patterns, Anthony, and we are about 30 seconds from closing the show. And I have just absolutely loved having you on. You are such a wonderful, inspirational pioneer. I truly value your wisdom and your insightfulness and such a visionary. I thank you so much for what you're doing for humanity and for all of us and for bringing your wisdom to my show today. Thank you so much for being my guest, Anthony. I've Anthony Lawler, 24 Patterns of Wisdom. You can find him at www.patternsofwisdom.com. Thank you so much, Anthony, for being my guest today.
Okay. Wonderful to speak to you, Lisa. It's really great. Also at anthonylawler.com is my website.
Oh, wonderful.
So, again, it's been my honor and pleasure to dialogue with you. It's great to speak with someone who's so aware and to have a creative jam session of wisdom with you.
Oh, I have truly loved it. It has been the highlight of my week. So thank you very much. And God bless you in all your endeavors. Thank you so much. I look forward to speaking to you again.
Me too. Have a great summer, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thanks
you too, Anthony. Thanks so much. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.